Good for you.
Kobe Desharayim.
Okay, Kobe Desharayim. This is definitely one of the topics that I struggled with whether I should digitally record. We're in Hilchos Deos, Perek Shlishi, third chapter, Halacha Aleph. And this gets us into a somewhat dicey topic, especially since I never know who's going to hear this. So if anybody disagrees with this, my email is revbini@araita.org, and I'm happy to answer questions. You know, someone's going to listen to this 10 years from now, and I'm going to be put in cherem. Although Rav Tversky once told me, the best thing that can ever happen to you when you write a book is that somebody puts you in cherem. Then it becomes a bestseller. So I'm in. This is going to be a difficult topic, okay? The Rambam is talking here, as we said.
The Rambam was around nowadays. He'd been there a long time ago.
Well, no, the Rambam's way up there. The Rambam became one of the Dolei Ador because they burned his books. Once they burn your books, you're in. That's a whole different level. But that's a whole other discussion. Don't get me started. Perek Gimel, okay, talks about the fact, right? Talks about the fact that a person wants to not just to lean towards, but to immerse oneself in almost an escape from the world. In other words, the Rambam starts and talks about the things that take you out of the world. We spoke about this yesterday, right? Kinah, right? Jealousy, tava, lust for things, etc. And these and running after honor. And the best way to make sure that you don't get sucked up in that is just to remove yourself. And that would seem to fit with where we began all of this. That if you're in one extreme, you go to the other extreme, right? As the Rambam says. And yesterday we talked about the fact that this seems to be at odds sometimes with some of the, not just the Makarot, the different sources, but Tzaddikim who, you know, distance themselves from physical pleasure. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, Pat b'melach tochal, is just eat bread with salt. Don't, you don't need steak. You don't need, you know, whatever, despite our conversation over the breakfast, right? And then, right? And the Rambam says that this is a mistake. V'gam zeh derech ra'ahi. Okay, this is bad. V'asul elechba. V'amalech b'derech zoni krachotei. If you distance yourself from the physical world, if you remove yourself from the physical world, right, you're a chotei. You're making a mistake. What they would call a sinner, but I don't think it's a sin. I think it's a mistake. You're not supposed to lean towards asceticism. You're not supposed to remove yourself from the world. You should immerse yourself in the world, right? This is the bottom of page 53. And you shouldn't prohibit to yourself, right? With oaths and all sorts of other methods, things that are permitted. If the Torah allows you to do something, then it allows you to do something. There's nothing wrong with going to a restaurant and ordering a big fat entrecote steak, right? And yet, if you struggle with the tava for these things, then that's a problem. So the Rambam, right? So the question is, how does that fit with the world of yeshivot? In other words, I don't know. A few of us went on one Shabbos afternoon to visit the Mir. Right? You remember we came, right? Who here went with me? I know Daniel went with me. Anybody else here? Yeah, right, Rafi? He went to the Mir, right? Went to the Mir. He went to the Mir. There are people, they sit there 20 hours a day, right? And I remember when I was in Kush, you know, there were guys who would sit in the basement. They didn't even go to lunch. They would like bring, you know, they would have like a cup of tea in the morning, bring an apple. You know, they would run to the dining room, maybe make a minimalist sandwich, run back to the basement, eat it on the way to the basement, with having in mind that they would bench when they get there so they wouldn't be over any halachos, and just sit all day. Totally remove themselves from the world, right? We need to work for a living. We need to work for a living. Send out a mass email once a week. See who gives you a donation so you can sit in kolo and sit and learn Torah all day. So the Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah, by the way, it's interesting that Hilchot Talmud Torah is also here in Sefer Hamadah, right? Which means that it's also one of the essential pieces of developing relationships, you know, that the Rambam starts with. If you look in Perek Gimel, Halacha Yud and Yud Aleph, it says like this, okay? Chapter 3, verse Halacha number 10 and 11, it says, Kol ha-mesim alibo, whoever puts on their heart, she-ya-asok b'torah, that he's going to, you know, not just learn Torah, but immerse himself in Torah, right? V'lo yaseh melachav yitparnes min tzedakah, and he won't work, and he'll gain sustenance from tzedakah. Harezeh, what do you think about that? Now think about that. This is a person who says, I'm going to sit and learn Torah. My wife had a cousin, special boy, he came from South Africa. In South Africa, they have less, the Jewish education is not quite up to the par that it is in some yeshiva high schools in New York. So when he got here, he actually got into Gush. He went to Gush, and he didn't like it at all. He was there for 2 or 3 months. I don't know the whole story. It can be a pretty cold place if you're looking for warmth, and he was. I didn't have that issue because I wasn't looking for that, Lebriot. And he left Gush. He went to a couple different places. I think he went to Or Sameach. Eventually, ended up in the Mir. And he started shtaiking. He got really into learning. And he sat in the Mir for many years. And I remember I ran into him like in his second year in the Mir, and I was talking to him in Torah, and I realized he was just really starting out. Like, there were basic things he didn't know, whatever. And I recently ran into him, and we had a brief conversation, and he's in a different space. He's been sitting and learning for 20 years. And I remember about, 6, 7 years ago, so I ran into him at a family simcha, and we were talking. And I said, so what are you up to? He said, I'm learning. So I said, oh, really? Where are you learning? He said, in the Mir. So I said, wow, you learn how long you stay in the Mir? He goes, he didn't understand the question. He said, well, as long as I can. I said, no, I mean, are you going for smicha? Is the point to... And he didn't understand the question. And it seemed to me, and again, it wasn't about him, it was more about the conversation, that, as long as he could sit and learn, he would sit and learn. So I said to him, so if you could sit and learn there forever, would you sit and learn there forever? He said, absolutely. So I said, well, then what would the point be of the learning? In other words, don't get me wrong. I think it's beautiful to sit and learn Torah, and I think there's a lot of Kedusha to learn Torah, and you become a span, you have a lot to give. But if you stay in yeshiva all the time that you're learning Torah, if you sit there for 100 years till the end of your life, unless you're taking the Torah somewhere, if you're not taking it out to make a difference in the world, you're missing something. Now, don't get me wrong. A person could sit in yeshiva, and he could start teaching new students. Like, I suppose there is a... But that has a limited capacity. Like, if everybody came to yeshiva and stayed forever... then there'd be no room in the yeshiva, and you couldn't then make a case that you need everybody there to teach the younger guys. What's the point of the Torah if it doesn't go anywhere? So what do you think the Rambam says about somebody who sits, learns Torah, and says, I'll be mit parnes from tzedakah, let people support the kollel, and I'm learning Torah, the world needs people to learn Torah. Pardon? Well, but how would you define? Would you say a person, it's a mistake? Would you say, listen to what the Rambam says? This is a chil Hashem. You understand this? This is a chil Hashem. No, this is not me. This is the Rambam. Harei zeh chilel et Hashem u'biza et haTorah. And he, what's a bizayon? He disgraces Torah. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Do you understand what a severe statement this is? Do you understand why they're burning the Rambam's books back then? In other words, you go up to the mirror. And I'm not disparaging a particular yeshiva, chas v'shalom, because there are people at every yeshiva that get this, and they'll sit for 10 or 15 years in order that they can go out and teach. But if there's an individual there, right, people who sit and just learn in order to learn, and just change the sign. Don't call it Kol Torah, don't call it Ol Torah, don't call it Vayavro Torah, call it Bizayon Torah. The Bizayon Torah yeshiva, that's an unbelievable statement. That's an unbelievable statement, do you understand that? Right? Harei zeh chilel et Hashem u'biza et haTorah v'chiba ma'or hadat. He's extinguishing the light of Judaism, of religion. V'garas ra'al atzmo. And he's one way of understanding this, he's determining or suggesting that there should be evil for himself. It's not good. V'natal chayav min olam haba. And he removes himself from Olam Haba, you understand? People sitting learning Torah all this time so they can get to Olam Haba. The Rambam says they're actually limiting themselves from Olam Haba. This would be a very difficult line when we get to what the Rambam means. I'm sorry. What the Rambam means by Olam Haba. Right? Because this is not going to make much sense. Let me just put this on, I apologize. Right? Not going to make much sense. That's a pretty severe statement. L'fisha asur le'anot midivrei Torah ba'olam hazeh. You're not supposed to gain hana from... So what does it mean? You're not supposed to get around. So that's a whole different discussion. The Rambam says Torah has to be a vehicle. Like, this isn't just me talking. This is the Rambam, right? Amru chachamim kol anene midivrei Torah natal chayav min haolam. You're not supposed to do this just for the pleasure of Torah. Ve'od tzivuv amru ehov et hamelacha. You should love the labor. Revel in the opportunity to do work. You come in one day, and breakfast is not clean up. Somebody got very annoyed at me. Somebody in the yeshiva. Because on Shabbos, I forget when it was, lunch, Shalosh Shudas, whatever. So I was helping to set up the tables. So one of the guys, I think it was one of the Menachim, said, I don't know, some of you announced, no, no, good guys should help, the Rosh Yeshiva shouldn't, whatever, blah, 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 right? And so I was still like helping with this, because I want to get the table set up, because I wanted the owning. Oh, I don't know what it was, before the owning. Because I want to get the owning running, you know, people are tired. So somebody came over and said, you know, it's like, look at Kach Yafeh that the Rosh Yeshiva is doing whatever. So I quoted him this Rambam, I said, I have tam lacha. I think that's pshat. I think if I mean, I remember when Aaron Lichtenstein, you can imagine, like, I shouldn't even mention in the same breath, but Aaron Lichtenstein went to the army. He came to Israel much later. He was married. He had children. But he felt if you're living in Eretz Israel, you have a responsibility to serve. So he joined the army as a Slav Betnik, which means that he did like, I don't know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks of Tironut, basically basic training. And then it means that he has Miluim. So for whatever 10 years he had left, he did Miluim. So I don't remember if it was on Sadir when he was in his regular 3 weeks or if he was in Miluim. But basically, he didn't have much skill set. Like, it wasn't like he, you know, could go out on combat patrols. I mean, you know, but back then, they needed men. So he went to Miluim, and they assigned him kitchen duty. He spent 3 weeks in the kitchen. And his job was to clean pots and pans. Now, he was the Rosh Yeshiva of Gush. And he was doing Miluim. And he was in a kitchen on some big base, scrubbing pans. So it happened to be that there was some Hizdernikim on this base. There were some Yeshiva guys. And some of them were Gushnikim. And they were in a course. And they come into the kitchen, they drop the thing, and they see Rav Aaron Lichtenstein comes out of the kitchen collecting their pots. I mean, can you imagine? You're Rosh Yeshiva. So they didn't know what to do. So they wouldn't let him. They started taking the pots in. Meanwhile, they were late for a Mizdar, and the Mefaked is like waiting for them. You know, you have to get to Mizdar. They said, we can't leave our Rosh Yeshiva to wash pots. So they basically got into trouble because they went into the kitchen and they started washing up all the pots. Well, when this episode was over, they got into big trouble because they were an hour late for they were late for. So the sergeant said, "Why? You know, where were you? You're getting on report. You're going to lose Shabbat." They said, "Well, we saw Rosh Yeshiva was in the kitchen, so we couldn't let him. So we went to wash all the pots." So the guy didn't believe him. Like, are you kidding me? Like, Israelis? Okay, yeah, sure. Right? You went to the kitchen to wash pots. That's why you're late. So he went to check it out. He found that these three religious soldiers actually went into the kitchen and together finished off all the pots from lunch because they could not bear to see the Rosh Yeshiva do it. And this sergeant was so flabbergasted by this, right, that he didn't punish them. He just couldn't imagine that people would... You don't understand what pots and pans in the army kitchen is. It's the most horrendously nightmarish thing. It's just, you walk into a room, it's about the size of half the space, and it's just full of dirty pots. And you get a cook who's got the IQ of your shoe size, right, and who's the living epitome of everything that you know, sort of this country, you know, doesn't want to be. And he's usually got a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, not because he smokes, just because he likes the ash trail, right? And he usually speaks in such a way that you can't understand him, right? And he looks and goes, right? That's what they talk to you. And you're just going out of your mind. And then he comes in at like 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night, after you've been watching pots all day and your hands are raw and wet and white. You know how that like gets in? Your feet are soaked and you're soaked and you stink. And you finally finish all the pots and you're exhausted, you can't stand. And he comes in and he finds one pot, right? And he goes into the pot, like in the bottom, he goes like this, he goes, Ogbam! And he walks out of the room. And he's your master for the day. So Rav Lichtenstein is experiencing that. So why would So Rav Amital found out about this, he went bananas. He called up the head of, I mean, Rav Amital is a colonel in the army, like forget about that, he's a tremendous Talmud Chacham. And he's one of the founders of the Hasidim movement. He called up the Rosh Igud Yeshivot Hesder. It got all the way to the Rosh Akka, the head of manpower and personnel for the entire Israeli army. It should not be in the computer allowed that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, right? And they had a battle about it, Rav Aaron gave a sicha, and apparently that's how I know the story. I mean, it was before I was there, but he gave a sicha. He said, what do you mean? Who else should be in the kitchen doing pots but the Rosh Yeshiva? That's where you belong. People should see it. Havatam lacha. You should love the labor. It's true, right? And the Rambam goes on. Ma'ala gdolahi l'mishehu mitparnes mimaseh yadav. It's a tremendous ma'ala that a person should gain, should be able to support themselves from their own labor. I want you to know, and I say this with some trepidation because It's a very dangerous thing to say because it presumes to judge an entire tzibur, an entire community, and that's a dangerous thing to do. And there's a lot of beauty in the world of yeshivot, and it's good that there are many people sitting and learning Torah. But there is a culture that has been created that it's okay to sit and learn Torah in order to sit and learn Torah. And that the goal is just to learn Torah. That's not learning Torah. That's Avodah Zarah. And not only that, but there's a culture that's been created that the community, the tzibur, the public, should be responsible to support the people who sit and learn Torah. And that's a very dangerous perspective. And not at all what the Rambam says. Yeah.
What does he mean when he says Chil Hashem?
Pardon?
What does he mean when he says Chil Hashem?
Oh.
What aspect?
Oh, okay. So we said, Chilul, from the word Chol, right, which people translate in all sorts of ways, profane, right, secular, right? Chilul really means devoid of Kedusha. Okay? Chol is the opposite of Kodesh. Sometimes in order to understand something, you need to understand its opposites. Like we once talked about the fact that in order to understand what Tum'ah is, you understand what its opposite is, Tahara, Kedusha, whatever it might be, right? So the opposite, so what is Kedusha? So we've always said that Kedusha is to be a vehicle for bringing Hashem into the world. Right? You limit yourself in certain ways, that's what Rashi says, in order to discover unlimitedness. Okay? And you become a vehicle for bringing Hashem into the world. So that would mean that what's Chol? Chol is when something is a vehicle for distancing Hashem from the world. Okay? Like for example, give me an example of something that's pure Chulin. It's devoid of Kedusha. You've taken something and made it into a vehicle for distancing Hashem from your life. Think about the fact, you want an example?
Sports.
Pardon? Sports. No, sports is not devoid of Kedusha, Chas v'Shalom. Sports can be devoid of Kedusha. It depends what you do with it. Okay? My son, right, one of my sons, is really into Taekwondo. He's really into Taekwondo. And, you can imagine, I'm into a healthy balance of things. So if he wants to do Taekwondo, it's fine. I don't give, my other son a hard time that he decided he didn't want to do Taekwondo. It's fine. He did it for a while. He stopped. But this boy's really into it. Yeah. And he's like a red belt. He's getting towards a black belt, whatever it is. But when he goes to whatever he does in his competition, he's got a kippah on his head. They're part of a... In fact, they have this... he got chosen to be on Nivcheret Yisrael, which is like the Israel national whatever for his age. So they have to go like every other Tuesday night into Yerushalayim, and they study with this very imposing, formidable figure who sits them all down and basically reams them the first time they come and tells them like a bunch of different things, including the fact that if anybody misses one lesson, they're off the team. And if they don't do this and they don't do that, whatever, and if you think you're coming here to play games and blah, blah, blah. And so he's like in terror of this. Like he gets there and if we're running late, and there's a whole carpool to get them there on time. And I think about this, like in the first couple of times I heard he was doing this, I was like, oh, this is what I need my son doing, like on Tuesday night, like he's going off to study Taekwondo, whatever it is. So I went 1 week to watch it. It's amazing the discipline that these kids learn from it. And there's these kids, there's like a few, two or three kids from Efrat, with kids from all over the country. And there's three boys, my son and two of his friends, and they've got kippot on their heads. And they got like tzitzis flying in the wind. And they're doing Taekwondo with all these other kids, and they get into the greatest discussions. And he told me that he got into a discussion with one boy who's his age, he's 11, right? About like when they were practicing. And the boy said, I go on Shabbat, I go to practice, whatever. So, when do you practice? He says, I can't practice on Shabbat, so I have to practice at night and I have to practice whatever. And they're having this discussion, why don't you practice on Shabbat? And Yair says to him, so Yair came back to tell me about this conversation. And I thought he would say to me, like he starts telling me the story, I thought he would say to me, oof, why do we have to do, why can't we practice Taekwondo on Shabbat? Like, I was ready for the theological discussion. He goes, is it miskin? Like, I don't know, what's a miskin in English? A nebuch. Is it miskin? He said, he practices all day, and no Shabbat, he has no Shabbat. Right? So he told me, that's what I said to him. I said to him, if you practice all week and you never rest, right? Like, sometimes you get to think about, like, the things you like and spend time, you don't always have to practice. So that whole thing becomes a vehicle for Kiddush Hashem, brings a little Hashem into the world. Right? The Israeli army is a good example. People don't have to be white, pasty-faced, sitting behind a shtender, right? Not that I think there's anything wrong with that. If you're learning Torah, it's beautiful. On the other hand, you could take it to an extreme. It becomes all about the muscle and all about the body and all about whether you have this and that. And what do they call it? You have to have a six-pack. Why do you have to have a six-pack? You know what a six-pack is? Like, you know, these people work out to such a degree that they have to... You know, we don't dress that way anyway. Nobody's going to see it if you have... We're a waste of energy. So it depends. Everything has the potential to have a Kiddush Hashem or a Chilul Hashem. Why then is a person who's sitting and learning Torah? How could a person sitting and learning Torah be Mechalel at Hashem? Because the purpose of bringing Hashem into the world is to bring Hashem into the world. If you're not bringing Hashem into the world, you're just bringing him into your base medrash. And you have all this ability to bring Hashem into the world. I had this debate with someone last year. I happen to think that that there isn't one recipe that applies to everybody. I think it's a very dangerous thing. There isn't one recipe that applies to everybody. You can't say that everybody here should go to university, to go to YU. It just can't be that in a base medrash that every single person here, and now I'm going to get in trouble and put in this empty. It can't be that everybody in this base medrash should go to YU. But it also can't be that every boy here who's planning on going to Ivy League college or whatever it is, that there isn't somebody here who should be going to YU. That becomes a tremendous wisdom. How do you know who should go where? So I got into a discussion with somebody from YU about this. And I said, look, I don't push guys to go to YU. If I think that a guy could go to YU and really grow from it and he's ready for it, whatever, it's an unbelievable experience. But I've met guys who go to YU and they have a miserable experience. Depends who you are. So we were debating this topic. And one of the things that he said was, you know, you don't realize how the American university system wears you down. And it's true. I mean, there's a couple of guys here who can tell you this. It wears you down, spiritually, religiously. On the other hand, if you have the strength to withstand it, and you succeed somehow in bringing Kedusha into such an environment, that's unbelievable. Right? So that's what the Rambam's talking about. This is a very dangerous topic, I want you to understand. Because how do you draw that line, and how do you know? Right? Now, just to make sure that we don't leave this one-sided, right, the Rambam does say in Halacha Zayin, in Perek Gimel of Talmud Torah, right, he says, Shema tomar adshek akabetz mamon achzor ve'akra. Lest a person say, you know what, I've been learning, but I got to go earn money. So I'm going to go and work hard until I get enough money, and then I'll come back and learn Torah. Adshek ekne ma sheni tzarich ve'efne miski ve'achzor ve'akra. Or lest a person say, I'm just going to earn enough money until I buy what I need. I have to go, and I have to work, and I have to earn money so that I can buy a house, so I can save money for the children, whatever, and then I can come back and sit and learn Torah, right? Im taleh machshava zu alibcha, if that's what you think, ein ata zocheh likrut kitura shel Torah le'olam. That thought process will prevent you from acquiring the crown of Torah in your life. Now, Keter Torah is an interesting discussion. One way of understanding it is, it's not that you're a Talmud Chacham, it's that you live in a world where Torah is important. It's a different world. The people in this world that get that are in a different space. They're in a different place. They're in a different space. They see the world through different eyes. They go out into the world. They work. They're lawyers and doctors and businessmen. But they somehow have the ability to see what are really priorities in this world. Right? It's not an accident that Jews give more tzedakah per capita than any other religion or nationality. That's a statistical fact. And it's not an accident that the Orthodox world has a very, very high per capita because that's what Torah is supposed to do. Right? Of people who have money. That's another discussion. Right? Ela asei toratcha keva. Umelachtecha arai. Make your Torah what's set in your life. And your work should be temporary. Work enough so that you can sit and learn Torah. And then work some more when you need some more to sit and learn Torah and find that balance. So I want you to understand. The Rambam is kind of looking for what the Rambam always looks for, which is balance. And the balance in the Rambam is, on the one hand, Torah has to be my priority. On the other hand, the goal is not to immerse myself in Torah to the exclusion of the world. And if you think that in order to avoid the extreme, asceticism is a valuable path and a noble goal, you're completely missing the boat. That's just not what Judaism is. Not only is that not what Judaism is, but if you make Torah your goal, you're actually Mechal Shem Shamayim. That's not the kind of thing you will normally hear in yeshiva, but that's the Rambam. And that will allow us, Bezrat Hashem, to get to the next piece, you know, within the context of Chazdeus. We're still in Halacha Gim. Halacha Gim is a long halacha. It'll take us a couple of days to finish it. And so it brings us back just to remind you, so what's wrong with asceticism? Like, just so we're clear, I want to be sure we all understand this. So what is wrong with asceticism? There are two things that are wrong with asceticism, with distancing yourself from the world. And they are? Asking the question, what's wrong with being ascetic? What's wrong with removing yourself? Do you agree with me if a person removed himself from the world and he never had to deal with, you know, if a person is at risk for fooling around and doing all sorts of terrible licentious behavior, or he's gambling, or he's drinking, that he'd be better off removing himself from all that, right? That abstention. So what's wrong with that? Pardon?
Is that the point of Torah?
Well, why not? Pardon?
It's based on moderation.
Ah, because it's not balanced. You have to find balance. Now, this is a very dangerous topic. Because there are things you don't find balance from. Give me an example of something. Like, you don't find balance in heroin. You don't say, like, well, we'll do heroin once in a while. Right? Like, there are certain things, but that's because those things are things that do not allow you to retain balance. You're not able to be balanced with those. Anything which removes your ability to live a balanced life are things that you should distance yourself. That's why the Rambam says there are two character traits that you can't be in balance with, arrogance and anger. Because if you have anger in your life, you have arrogance, they preclude your ability to live in a world of moderation, live in a world of balance. But that is the goal. The goal is that middle path. That's why this is Perek Gimel, is a natural flow from Perek Aleph and Perek Bet. Questions? Yeah?
Didn't we say that if you're engaging in certain activities, you know, in a creative manner, you have to go to the opposite in order to find the middle balance?
Right.
So, I think that contradicts what you were just saying, or rather what Mendy commented on.
Oh, like, good, it's Mendy's fault, yeah.
No, I'm like being, like, for example, let's say fast. Let's say, well, clearly, I don't think anybody in this room would say, oh, yeah, we should fast every day, you know, thanks, Hashem, whatever. You know, I think there are people who, you know, would do like a half a fast like Monday and Thursday, or like, in, you know, in moderation, in order to get you in a deeper...
Oh, it's a good example.
So, like, would you say that even that's too much, or would you say that's balanced? Or?
Well, it's interesting. We do have fast days. And the Rambam in Hilchot Taniyot, in the Laws of Fast, definitely says that there are public fasts, and a person should fast in those public fasts, and that if a person needs to remove themselves, you know, as a vehicle for tshuva or whatever it might be, that a fast is sometimes appropriate. He talks about this in Shemona Prakim. But in Hilchos Tshuva, when the Rambam lists those vehicles to, you know, the things that can help you do tshuva, he does not include fast. In fact, the Tshuva Sarashba takes him to task for this. And says that I think it's in the Rashba that says that that's a problem, because the Gemara says that Taniyot are a vehicle to tshuva, and the Rambam says no, you're not supposed to do excessive fasting, and he gives a very hard time. You find this in a number of Makaros sources. He gives a very hard time to people who believe that excessive fasting leads one to tshuva, because it basically is a form of asceticism. And it's very interesting, by the way, because one of the challenges is not just part of this is also you have to know who you are. Like, the reason that this is coming up in Hilchot Deot is because you meet different types of people that have different character traits. Like, there is a certain type of personality. We had a student like this last year. There is a certain type of personality that he actually can gain from a certain amount of asceticism, from a certain amount of distancing himself, from eating less and going to town less and whatever. And just, you know, most people can gain from that, but I'm saying. But sometimes that can pull a person in a direction that takes them off the deep end. You know, you meet these guys, you know, sometimes floating around Tzfat, and they're 45 years old, and they're mystically holy, but they're not married, they have no children, they have no parnasa, they have no way of earning a living, they're miserable. And they're not happy. And they're trying very hard to be happy, because they know they have to be happy, but they're not happy. Right? And that's very difficult. And that stems from that flow. You have to find that balance. Right? That's the goal. Defining what your particular point of balance is, that's a difficult question. By the way, just to be clear, we're not, just so we're clear here, and I include myself here, we're not anywhere near the risk of too much Talmud Torah. Like, let's just be clear about that. Like, we're talking about the person who says, I'm going to sit in a Beis Medrash for 30 years. Like, I was in a Beis Medrash for 12 years. And I did things while I was there, and I Baruch Hashem, never took tzedakah, and I didn't take money from my parents, and I had the odd jobs, and I did all sorts of things. And even the first... you know, 3-4 years I was married. I was in Madrich at nights, but I learned in the Beis Medrash during the day. And eventually it was time for me to leave the Beis Medrash, and I miss it to this day. I miss it terribly. At one point this year, we'll go visit the Gush, and when I walk into the Beis Medrash in the Gush, I still get a pang of, like, how could I leave this? Right? But I didn't think that I was at the point of anywhere near being at risk of asceticism. So being 1 year in yeshiva is not like, okay, like, nobody should in any way, shape, or form assume that I'm saying that 1 year in yeshiva, especially the way we do, the way kids today do yeshiva, that, you know, you have to go back to America next year because you don't want to be an ascetic. Like, we're not even close to that. But as a principle, like, this should be our challenge. But in terms of understanding, you know, when you encounter that person who wants to know, how could you go to university? when you should be sitting and learning Torah? And why would you ever leave yeshiva? That's an interesting dilemma. And the Rambam does comment on it. Now, by the way, just so you understand, this whole discussion is an appetite whetter. That's all this is. It's an opportunity to give you a little taste of a little piece of a set of halachot of the Rambam. But like, I don't know. I don't know how could a person not want to learn Hilchos Talmud Torah? Like, the Rambam is Hilchos Talmud Torah. Unbelievable. You want to know how to deal with being in a campus and being able to learn Torah. It's all there laid out in the Rambam. The Rambam was a master of this, and he lived what he spoke. He was a doctor. Not only was he a doctor, he was a voracious reader. He knew philosophy and theology. He could quote Plato and Aristotle. He lived what he preached. But he lived in the world of Torah. His anchor was Torah. He was a Talmud Chacham who lived in Torah, but he was willing to take his Torah out with him to venture into the world of secular knowledge and politics. Okay? Cool? Any questions? Morning Seder awaits. Boker Tov, guys. Shkech.